Welcome to the 60th episode of It Wasn't Me, a true crime podcast where we discuss murders that intrigue us. I am Cindy.
And I'm Mercedes. Thank you for listening to last week's episode about the brutal beating death of Brandy Bernard and her unborn baby.
Our show is often horrifying and graphic, and we will use offensive language. So if you have kids, put them away for a while and join us for a murder. Also, we are passionate and always have been about true crime, but we must warn you, sometimes we'll make jokes and we will laugh during our podcast.
Want to learn more about us? Visit our website at itwasn'tmetruecrime.com to find links to our social media pages. We drop a new episode every Friday morning, so be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform so you don't miss out. Also, thank you for listening. If you are even slightly entertained by our Southern charm, please leave us a 5-star rating along with a comment. If not, please reach out to us and let us know how we can improve. Also, recommend our podcast to your friends and family. We would really appreciate it.
All right. Hey, girl.
Hey. How you doing?
I survived.
Yeah, you did. You sound good. You look good. So you're feeling good today, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Good. Good. And now you and your husband both had COVID. And did you have similar symptoms or did you have a different manifestation of the illness?
I think I had a headache longer than he did.
Okay.
He did have one like really bad one day, but mine was kind of like all week long.
Uh-huh.
And then he had really bad body aches. I did not have body aches at all.
That's just so interesting.
Yeah. And he was super exhausted all the time, but I was not. So I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yes. But I already have the sinus issues.
Yes.
So I had a really bad cough. My cough was worse than his too.
Okay.
And neither one of us had a fever.
Neither one of you had a fever. Oh, that is interesting.
Nope.
But you were still contagious, obviously.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And then I did lose my taste. All right. Well,
anyway, I'm glad you're back this week.
Yeah.
I did it all by myself last week and I did okay, but of course the banter, you know, it was much shorter and I really missed the banter between us. So
yeah,
I'm glad you're back.
Yes, I'm back. I'm, you know.
That's good. I'm happy that you're doing well. So what do you have for us this week?
All right. Well, so before, obviously, I've ever mentioned it. So Mercedes, have you ever heard of the Ant Hill Kids?
No, I have not.
I had not either.
Intriguing.
Yes. Some of them will start to sound a little reminiscent and familiar of another, episode that we've done before.
That we've done before.
Yes. Just a little bit, though.
Okay. I'm going to see if I can't guess that one.
Okay. I don't think you'll have a problem. Here we go. So before I do like this whole deep dive. All right. So before I do a whole deep dive into the Ant Hill Kids, I have to really discuss the brainchild, I guess you would say, or the person behind Ant Hill Kids.
Okay.
All right. Because he's a real peach. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. His name is Roche. No, it's not Roche. Yes, it is
Rock.
Roche. Nope, I was saying Rock earlier to myself, but it's not Rock. It's
okay.
Roche.
Okay.
It's Roche Terrio.
Okay.
So Roche Terrio was born May 16th, 1946 in Quebec, Canada. He was raised in a place, like he was born in one little area, and then as a young child, they moved to this Thetford Mines.
Okay.
And his family described him as a kid who was very bright, very smart, and lots of people say this, but that he was a kid who played with wild bears.
Oh.
Sure he did. Like baby bear cubs, maybe?
Maybe. So did you ever see that movie about the guy that went and lived with bears and then he ended up getting killed by a bear?
Was that the Leonardo DiCaprio movie?
No, it was actually like a documentary. It was a true story. And he filmed all this. He went with his girlfriend and she was a photographer or videographer. I'll have to look at it.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
You have got to.
Okay. All right. So this town, that's okay. This town, Thetford Mines, was known for, and this might explain some things later. I mean, I say that, but anyway, this town was known for being one of the world's largest asbestos producing regions.
Oh.
And there was, you know, this big quarry there and all of that. So I'm like, well, maybe that contributed to his later mindset. It's really bad for him.
Like maybe it affected him mentally?
I mean, maybe. I mean, I know it's like, okay, you know, bad for your lungs. So I don't know. I was just
throwing
that out there.
Okay.
As a child, as I already said, he was considered to be highly intelligent. However, he dropped out of school in the seventh grade because the local school was like a K through seven. And so all of the kids in this family didn't continue on past the seventh grade.
Oh, Grizzly Man. Grizzly Man is the name of it.
Oh, okay. So once he dropped out of school.
So that's as high as anyone went in this town as far as education.
I can only speak for the Terrio family.
All right.
So here's some more information about this person. Would start to teach himself the Old Testament of the Bible. But that's kind of like, there's a huge gap there. So I'm going to kind of gloss over that real quick and then tell you how he gets to where he's going. So somehow along the way, he believed that the end times were upon us. Mm-hmm. And he believed that the end of the world was brought on by a war between good and evil. So he was raised Catholic, which is not surprising that he's from Quebec. So they're French Canadian. But we're not talking just run-of-the-mill, everyday Catholic. His father, Hyacinthe,
okay,
sure, was a devoutly religious man and a member of the Union of Electors. So then I looked up Union of Electors, and he was a member of the Pilgrims of St. Michael, which is also known as the White Berets due to their mission uniform. This is a Catholic fascist offshoot of a Depression era Credidiste movement.
You always come up with these with hard words.
I know, which is really the social credit movement. That is what that is.
So socialism, is that what we're talking about? I mean, Canada is socialist anyway, right?
Yeah, but this is like Depression era. So, okay. I mean, and so without totally going down that rabbit hole, because it would be very easy to do that, the White Berets are like the religious factor of the social credit political movement. You know, this whole Union of Electors is this, it's just this political movement. That's my very basic understanding of it.
It's totally over my head, but that's okay.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I can't go anymore.
It's okay.
Now with all of that, Roche began really hating Catholicism and just organized religion altogether. This was primarily due to the fact that his dad was like super devout and, you know, required them to go to mass and like always be there and all this attendance that they had to, you know, be present for. And his father's also, it states in the research that his father's forced door-to-door White Beret literature distribution campaigns.
So kind of like what maybe the Jehovah's Witnesses, or they go to your door and try to, what do they hand you? Those religious tracts and try to
watch tower.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Roche was given really little to complain about throughout his childhood. It is said later that maybe his father was abusive and his dad never even admitted or denied it, really. It was just, but he had an uneventful childhood and adolescence. Right.
No big traumatic events or anything like that.
No. Okay. But he, as he grew older, he discovered that complaining about his childhood gained him like sympathy. And he was very charismatic with people and very smart. And he liked to kind of like brag about that. And so between this and his interest in a number of other topics that he was able to talk about enough things to where he like really seemed to be super intelligent. And I think of it like he could hear something and then he could just regurgitate it in a way that seems like, you know, like, oh, well, I know this information. And it's not really that he maybe really was super detailed in knowing like all of these different topics, but that, you know, he was able just to regurgitate it and knew a little bit about a lot of things maybe.
All right.
And like I said, he was often praised for being super smart. You know, even later, you know, mental health professionals like really praised him for, you know, his brilliance. And this led to his craving the attention that he was getting. So it wasn't like, I mean, everyone likes attention every now and then, but he like craved it and needed it. And this desire was easily satisfied by his physical presence. So I'm assuming that means that like maybe he was good looking at one time and like a kind of a big man. I didn't get too into that And he was very showy.
Are there pictures of him out there? Did you see?
Yes. And he had a beard and was bald, like a bald. Oh. Like, he was very, like a woodsy looking kind of.
Oh, okay.
Like a man, you know.
A grizzly man. Okay.
Yeah.
Like a lumberjack kind of or something. Okay.
And he also found that spirituality was very attractive. So we'll just leave it at that. On November 11th, 1967, he married Francine Grenier, who was from like a town over from where he lived. And they got married, moved to Montreal. And within a few short years, they had two sons, Roche Jr. and Francois. During this time, Roche developed severe ulcers and that he actually had to have like surgically like lanced, I guess, or relieved, you know.
Uh-huh.
And there was complications and just, he was probably really grumpy, I would think.
Yeah.
So, he was in a lot of discomfort and like I said, he was just irritable and probably just a grumpy man. I mean, I would be. If I had severe.
Well, you know what? When you're in extreme pain, it's hard to think about anything else, honestly.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like that. Like, that's all. You can't just stop thinking about it sometimes when that's on the forefront of your mind. And yeah, when you're hurting, you are grumpy most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You are. I know. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I know about.
No, I'm not saying you, because you can handle pain.
Yeah. So at this point, he became obsessed with researching. It says he became obsessed with medicine, but it's like the, not just like actual medicine. He like the whole practice of medicine. And he started teaching himself about the anatomy and just, you know, the whole body and like everything, what was going on with him and everything else, just became obsessed with it. He moved his family from Montreal back to his hometown and he began developing his skills as a woodworker. So, I mean, he had to work. So, you know, he became involved in politics. He joined, I guess, the French Canadian version of the Shriners.
All right.
And then he used that platform to constantly make fun of Catholicism. Despite the fact that all those people were Catholic, or that was their roots were Catholic. He also acquired a new interest.
All right.
Sex and sexuality.
With women?
Well, or yes.
Was he picky? Okay. So more than just with his wife.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, his wife did not appreciate this, and nor did her in-laws.
And this was also a time, like if we're talking about the early 70s, like free love and this, kind of like.
So he also took to drinking.
All right.
A lot.
Uh-huh.
Which probably wasn't good for his ulcers.
I wouldn't think.
Mm-mm. He was using his wood sculpting sales, his amateur wood sculpting. So I guess he was like had a little side business and was like, so he used that sales as an excuse to go outside of his little town to like Quebec City on weekends and carry on what they said, tryst with women he met.
Okay.
So he used this excuse to, you know, go philander, I guess you would say. He met a woman named Giselle, who is a big part of his life going forward. Eventually, Thériault's finances gave way and the local credit union repossessed his home. Francine was like, fuck this. I'm out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she got rid of him. She was like, I can't do this anymore. You're cheating, but you know, your house is taken, blah, blah, blah. So he took up with this Giselle person. Although he was having what they call sexual congress with her on a regular basis, to keep up appearances, he made a bed in the back of his truck so that it would appear that his scruples forbade him from sleeping with women to whom he was not married.
Okay. So he's still trying to keep up appearances in his small little town.
This was around the time that he left the Catholic Church.
Mm.
And I mean, like officially left and joined and discovered a different church.
Oh, yeah. Do tell.
Okay.
You're obsessed with these people.
He discovered The Seventh Day Adventist Church.
Right. Which you did, what did you do? A 2 or 3-parter on David Koresh. And
I did.
But was he was an offshoot of Seventh Day Adventist, Branch Davidians.
Yes. But okay. He started out Seventh Day Adventist.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you know, I don't mean to, and we may have some Seventh Day Adventist listeners out there. And I don't mean to be, insulting towards their beliefs at all, but man, my sister was married at a Seventh Day Adventist church, and like, they don't drink, they don't eat meat, they don't dance. Like, it was the
most, they
don't
eat unclean meat.
Well, they didn't eat meat at her wedding reception. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And there was no dancing. There was no drink. I mean, it was the most boring reception I have ever been to. It was a beautiful wedding, though. My sister looked beautiful.
And we have a mutual friend that.
Yes, we do. Yes.
So the Adventist ministered by a Guadalupian. Am I saying that right? Guadalupian?
Somebody from Guadalupe,
yes,
which is in Mexico, right?
Pierre Zita met at a local hotel room or motel room every Saturday.
All right, so they're meeting at a hotel room.
Yes.
Uh huh.
Roche was their most devout follower at this point. He began following the Adventist nutritional strictures, and quit drinking. So their core, like, nutritional beliefs is, you know, they don't eat unhealthy foods, they don't eat unclean meat, they don't smoke, drink, do drugs, any of that. So he quit drinking. In fact, his enthusiasm for God's work began to kind of creep out the other people. They were like, this is a little too crazy for us. You know, he's a little too gung-ho.
He's too extreme.
Yes. His boastfulness irritated those that knew his education was super limited. So Roche became fascinated. This is when, like, when he started, like, he became fascinated with the Old Testament, started really teaching it to himself. And he became obsessed with the whole, like, strict codes of patriarchy and masculinity, authority, and all of that.
Of course.
Of course. Yeah. And he was also super fascinated with the apocalypse. And the whole, like, message of how, like, the violence in it, the violence for the sins and all of that. It's like, he was like, super really soon, you know, hyper.
Very fundamental, like, extreme fundamentalism.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And, like, the whole division of the human race and, like, all of. All right. So for Terrio to make money, because obviously his woodworking wasn't bringing in enough income for him, he started selling Adventist literature door to door. Now, I've never had a Seventh Day Adventist come to my door. I don't know if they're, like, just dropping off, like, the little leaflets and the little pamphlets, or if it's kind of like how, like, Scientology, to get any kind of information about them, you have to buy it. So maybe they go and they talk to them and they're, you know, do, like, this, you know, whole thing. And then they're like, okay, well, we'd like more information. And they're like, okay, well, you know, here is a little order form and just order what you need. He proved himself to be very capable at doing this. And I think that it's because he had a little bit of a background, because his dad did the whole door to door of the white beret. So, you know, this isn't totally foreign to him.
And if he's charismatic and he's kind of charming, you know, he's going to get followers, or people are going to, you know.
Right. But it's interesting to me, because that's one of the reasons why he didn't like, you know, he kind of fell out with the whole Catholicism, is because of this, you know, group that his dad was in, and they were doing the door to door. So now, I mean, I guess maybe as he got older, he was like, well, I'm pretty good at this. So he was getting attention. So he realized that he was getting attention for this. So then it changed his whole, you know, his dad was probably really getting the attention when he was younger, and his dad was doing it, maybe dragging him along. So now it's just different. So this Zita person began giving him workshops, So like little training sessions on how to quit smoking and just different.
So that's how he would get people in, maybe, is, you know, come in if you want to quit smoking, we'll do this workshop.
Yeah. And then also on, you know, just traditional evangelism, Adventist evangelism. And he soon discovered that he was good at that and he began to excel. And so by 1977, he has a little following. So he's got 10 people who are following him. And we have, is it Solange?
Solange.
Say it again.
Solange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that like Beyonce's sister's name?
I don't know. Probably. Okay. Yes, I think so.
So that person is 21. Chantel, who's 19. Francine, 18. Nicole, 20. Maurice, 18.
Is that a female or a male?
I think that that's a female, but I could, okay. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't.
All right.
Josie or Jose, 20. Jacques, who's in his mid-20s. Claude, 24. Another Jacques, who's 24. And his wife, Maurice or Mary's, who's 23. And their baby girl.
So young.
Young. Impressionable.
If he was born in 46, so he would be pretty young then, like 31.
Yeah. So he wasn't too old.
No.
Had three kids of his own. At this point, I'm not sure if how active he was in his kids' life at this time. All of these people plus Roche began hanging out at the Giselle's apartment. So remember the lady he was, you know, shacking up with?
Right. Right.
Though most
he was shacking up in the bed of his truck.
Yes, officially.
Right. Yeah. In our parking lot, right?
Right. So as most of the girls were still living with their parents, but the whole group would often spend weekends at Giselle's on the couch, on the floor, you know, wherever. Terrio encouraged all of them to drop out of college. After all, Christ was coming soon.
And who needs all that, right?
Yeah, what's the point? So there wasn't much point to learning skills that for a world that was already doomed. Giselle would become very jealous of the attention that the girls were giving Roche. But he had expressed interest in becoming a priest and had committed to total sobriety. And she came to regard this as totally, absolutely insanity and absurd. Even if she realized it wouldn't take much for Terrio to seduce any one of them. So even though she thought it was absurd and it wouldn't take much, in her mind, these girls were super naive. And they probably were. I mean,
And they probably adored every, you know, every step he took. Mm-hmm. They probably just, you know, oh, mighty Terrio, you know, like.
Right.
They just hung on his every word and were probably just waiting for him to make a move or, you know, go, come in, baby, or whatever, you know?
Yes. So
she knows him personally.
Huh?
She knows him personally. She's like, oh, you know, why are these girls hanging all over him?
Possibly? Mm-hmm. And then she became jealous. And remember how they were meeting in like the hotel room on Saturdays with the other people who were kind of like, I'm not so sure about this guy anymore. So Roche's Adventist ministers began to fear that this group had disaffected youth who were more attracted to Terrio's personality than they were really the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that that is kind of...
It's kind of cult-like.
Yeah. And
definitely.
Yeah, it is very kind of cultish like. And I mean, and a lot of times, like you meet somebody, and you're like, okay, well, yeah, I will try that church because I really, you know, I like that person, you know, where I go, you know, I really like the preacher. I don't really care about the people who are there or, you know, so like, is it, are you there for God? Or are you there because of some other, you know, it's the same thing. Yeah. So in 1977, he and his followers attended a retreat, Lake Rousseau, in the woods of Muskoka, Ontario. Here he met another woman by the name of Gabrielle, and two women. He met Gabrielle and he met Yolande, who was actually, like, one was from Quebec, Gabrielle was from Quebec and Yolande was from France. And then they joined in with him. So at one point during the retreat, Thériault went hiking by himself and climbed up on a rocky, like, outcropping, outer cropping. He said that he had a vision.
Oh, of course he did.
Right. In which the sky lit up with a white radiance and the voice of God told him that he was to kneel and this was a holy place.
So the outcropping that he was standing on was a holy place.
Yes. So that is that kind of like the
like the Lion King when he's holding up the baby?
Yeah.
The baby lion cub on the outcropping.
Or is it kind of like the Mount Sinai?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this was the first incident that would become the ruling element of their lives and of the people who were now following him.
Okay. I mean,
very.
So this is like kind of like the first prophecy of this guy.
Right. It's. Okay. I mean, it's very Abrahamic. Is that how I would say that? You know.
Yeah.
Which he probably read about in the Old Testament.
Yeah. Yep.
And these people don't know probably enough because they're not really attending these church services because they're there for to learn and their spirituality. They're there because they're attracted to him. So they're probably naive enough that they don't really know. I mean, I'm assuming here that they don't know that he's basically just ripped off, you know, a little bit of Abraham, a little bit of Moses. And
right. Know. Right. Yeah. Okay. So he's not doing drugs. He's not drinking. He's living a celibate lifestyle. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, I don't know about celibate.
Okay. Well, you said that he wanted to be a priest. So I wasn't sure, you know, I guess every priesthood is different, but yes. Yeah.
All right, Mercedes, I think this is a really good spot to hear from our sponsors this week.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. We left off with the
ruling element. He's on the outcropping. So God told him that this particular spot is
holy,
the holy place. Holy. So this is where he's going to set up camp, maybe, is my guess. Okay.
With the entourage of the 8 live-in followers, that's Giselle, Solange, Chantel, Francine, Nicole, Gabrielle, Jacques, and Claude. Everyone else wasn't, I guess, considered live-in.
Okay.
They had, they had a growing reputation as a healer. And sympathetic connections with Seventh-day Adventist health food and mission literature suppliers. So remember, he's the salesperson with the literature. So he's in with those people. And then they're very healthy, aware of what they're putting in their systems and all of that. So Thériault decided it was time to move from Thet Ford Mines, and he established them in Saint Marie, which is a region about 65 kilometers south of Quebec City. I don't know the conversion there. Here, they opened a healthy living clinic.
All right.
Which was an alternative medicine, like holistic, because they live a holistic lifestyle, where you can get organic foods, holistic literature to help you cure any ailment, as long as you had cash up front.
Right.
Thériault insisted they all wear a uniform, an ankle-length pullover tunic, green for women, beige for men, with Roche wearing dark brown robe of a similar cut. Very, very different here. So not only was he making money with this enterprise, his clinic, he was also attracting more followers. Several of the clinic's patrons volunteered and financially donated to his cause, including one Leo Mark, who sold everything to fund this clinic, sold all of his worldly possessions and donated all his money to the clinic, moved in with his wife and child. So now they have two more people, this other Jacques and the wife that I mentioned earlier with the 6-month-old did as well. So they sold all their stuff, donated their money, They join in. So they're like collecting people like a commune.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Maurice and the Jose Peltier rejoined the group. So they weren't originally living on mm-hmm. this commune of sorts. Now they are too. So this dynamic really started to get kind of weird. So with all the women, except for the Maris. Okay. So,
and she's the one that had the baby. She was married and had the baby. They were with her. Okay.
Yes. So she didn't like being on this compound commune of sorts. So all of these women, except for Maurice, were competing for Roche's attention. I'm sure that that was fun and dramatic, and I would want nothing to do with that. So eventually, Giselle became very paranoid that she might lose the attention of Roche. Like, she's like the head. She's like the head bitch in charge. And she started to worry that she was losing her standing with him, I guess you would say, to someone else. So she took the initiative to propose to him.
That'll solve your problems.
Yep. A week later, he decided he said, okay, we'll do this. And they got married January 8th, 1978 at an authentic Adventist church in Montreal. But there was no honeymoon.
All right.
The group piled back into the van for the 5-hour trip home.
Oh my Lord.
Terrio joking with all the other females all the way home. Giselle cried on a mattress in the back. So they have a van with all of these women piled into it with a mattress in the back of it. The new wife cried on the mattress for 5 hours all the way to the back.
I mean, what the fuck was wrong with her? I mean, you don't marry somebody just because you're afraid you're going to lose them like that.
Right. So Terrio, I mean, she became even more convinced that, you know, this is all wrong. She became convinced that it had all been a way to cement his relationship in the church as
what, marriage or
a facade what was... to display a display of sincerity to the church.
Okay.
Like, I don't know what in her mind, how she thought that, you know, getting married, I mean, who knows what she was thinking there on how, well, if he marries me or if he's agreed to marry me, even though she asked him, I don't know, maybe it would make him look more credible.
Okay. So I'm just not really following it because it seems kind of like a hippie type commune, but then he's worried about what the church will say.
Well, that's what she thinks in her mind. This is what she's thinking. Well, this is just a ploy to make him look good in the church, to marry me, to make him look, you know, more credible.
But he doesn't care what the church thinks, right? I mean, he's creating his own dogma and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And she asked him to marry her.
All right.
Well, the Adventists weren't convinced. They weren't, you know, they didn't think this showed any kind of sincerity. I mean, they just thought this dude's a weirdo. So Pierre Zita tried approaching the parents of the other like young girls and tried to convince Giselle to leave. We're like, this is not right. This is not normal. You need to get away. You know, tried to pose like an intervention for these girls. But Terrio's place in their hearts of his followers was just too much, too deep for friends and family to be able to displace them. They were not convinced. Even when the police came, because the families were like, you know, please get our precious babies out of there, they refused to talk to the police. So Terrio was their elected figurehead outside in the world. Even when businessmen began filing into the police station to complain about his inability to pay for bills, the police hands, there was nothing they could do.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't go to the police when somebody can't pay a bill, right?
Yeah.
A civil matter.
Right.
Well, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but I know here you can't.
Yeah, you can't just go down to the police department and say, someone didn't pay me their bill. You know, they're going to be like, well, what do you want us to do? We got enough shit to deal with.
So now, was he like draining their bank accounts or something? I mean, was he doing something illegal? I mean, aside from not paying his bills, like, was he, you know, was he brainwashing the girls and the parents are like, let's, you know, we need to get our daughters away from him. I mean, I'm not really sure that I'm following this, unless it's just that he was not going with what the church wanted and was doing his own thing. And that was pissing people off.
Yeah. And I mean, they did kind of, I mean, they were, he was their local figurehead. So they weren't really speaking out. And so I'm thinking he very much segregated. He started to segregate them from their families, especially when the families started saying, this isn't right. We want you right. home. And then the church was like, you guys need to leave. This isn't what we're about. Right. And
okay.
they didn't care really what the church was about because they weren't in it for the godly spirituality and the, you know, right. all of that. They were in it now because of him. They were following him.
Right. And possibly they believe what he said as, you know, yeah. here he is, he's, you know, getting messages from God.
Right. Well, in March of 1978, Geraldine Auclair was admitted to the Healthy Living Clinic. She had undergone a treatment for leukemia in Quebec City and things seemed to be going well, but her husband fell ill she fell in with Terrio. And so then he was like, oh, so now he had a new follower and now he needed his wife.
Right. And he's probably saying, you know what, bring her to me. You know, we'll do healthy treatments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my mom had cancer, there were people coming out of the woodwork with juices and, you know, gospel. My mom would fall for that stuff. My stepdad bought her all this like $100 a bottle juice. It was just ridiculous. She was convinced to go to Mexico and get coffee enemas. And I'm like, Mom, no. But you just grasp anything. And when you put God behind it, you're going to just get desperate people.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you are desperate, then you're trying to, you know, I mean, there were people.
You put your hope in God and
yeah.
It's just sickening to me.
Right. Because it's people using other people's
misfortune.
Well, Roche would end up getting into like a really loud argument with the doctors over Geraldine's treatment and particularly the amount of drugs they were giving her because she had cancer. She was in pain and they were, you know, giving her chemo and probably trying to keep her out of pain. And so Roche then, this is when he convinced the husband to check his 38-year-old wife and to check her out of the hospital and into this Healthy Living Clinic. Right. However, Geraldine's own father, here's the
isolation from family.
Where, like, yeah, her father wasn't allowed to visit her while she was in this clinic because the father probably would have been like, what the hell?
Right. Whoa. Right. Yeah. Like I was with my mom, like screaming and crying. I mean, literally had to throw a fit. And she's like, well, you know, God wants snatch some ma. I tried to explain to her that chemo treats people. Mm-hmm. I mean, with her cancer, it was just a matter of just keeping her comfortable, but whatever.
Right. Are you ready for this? You ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Roche's treatment for leukemia was grape juice and organic foods.
Oh, well. Hmm.
Yep. Geraldine died in the clinic. Terrio told his followers that he had gone into her room, kissed her, and she awakened from death.
Mm-hmm. Of course she did.
But that in the end, you know, this is a quote, you know, when God wants people, he takes them. It was Geraldine's time.
Right.
During this same time period as the clinic was existing, going on, the parents of a 19-year-old MS patient, another Gabrielle, placed her under the care of Terrio. And they had met him in one of his anti-smoking workshops.
Okay.
This poor little 19-year-old Gabrielle had MS and her parents, this admitted her into the care of Terrio at the same time as Geraldine was dying of cancer.
Okay.
So now we're April 1978. Terrio was kicked out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church
mm-hmm.
on Zita's initiative. So Zita went at the church and they basically voted him out, exalted him? No.
Excommunicated.
That's what I'm looking for. I'm like, exalted? No. So he's excommunicated, which was like our other guy that we did, Seventh-day yep. Adventist.
Uh-huh.
So Theriault didn't give a shit. He did not care.
Why would he?
Yeah. So his next move was to marry some of his followers.
Like, he's already married.
Uh-huh.
So now he's a polygamist.
Yes. So okay. In spite of this fact, not only did he lack the authority to perform marriages, so he's marrying all of them kind of like together.
So he's not marrying them. He's marrying.
Oh, well, he does consider them his wives too.
Okay.
So this is exactly word for word what it says. His next move was to marry some of his followers together, in spite of the fact that not only did he lack the authority to perform marriages whatsoever, his followers had actually not expressed any interest in getting married whatsoever.
All right.
At least not to the men Roche decided they should marry. Right. So he's performing.
It's like Jeff Warren's from, yeah.
What
is that?
It's arranged marriages or
yes.
Yeah, whatever. All right. Now we have some new people. Claude Ouellet was
Ouellet.
Huh?
Ouellet. Claude Ouellet.
Maybe that's the French way of saying it, but the American way, because I know somebody with that last name. So anyway, Claude was paired with Solange. One of the Jacques was paired with Nicole. Solange invited her parents to the ceremony. On advice from their priest, they decided to attend.
Okay. Just to support their daughter, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. If only to show their daughter that they still loved her. They reported that Roche's wedding ceremony was not at all what they expected.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
He was rambling. He gave like this rambling speech, stressed that women's role was subservient to the man's role. And some women in Solange's family cried and not because they were happy. They were like, holy shit, what is going on? So by the spring, good old Giselle, she's pregnant. So, you know, is why his like real wife.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's pregnant. She's still feeling rejected, this poor woman. So she decided either you break the commune, you know, she gives him an ultimatum. She says, you know, this is too much, just like the first wife. She said, either he break with the commune and encourage his follower to find new homes, or she was moving back in with her dad.
Mm-hmm.
Theriault's answer was to smash her in the mouth and forbid her to leave the room for 2 days.
Oh, so wait, has he been abusive before?
This is the first mention of
this is the first mention of it. Interesting.
So I'm going to end right there.
So you're going to end with his wife getting smashed in the mouth.
And
locked up in a room for 2 days.
For 2 days. Yep.
Okay. So this guy is freaky. And I'm intrigued and can't wait to know more, but he, you know, he does look like a psycho. I just looked up a picture of him. So
yes, he does.
Psycho. Well, I'm so glad you're back, Cindy, and thank you so much. I'm super intrigued and excited for next week.
You're welcome.
All right. And everybody else, thank you so much for listening to this week's murder. We appreciate sharing our passion with you. We thank you for your support. And if you want to support us even further, please subscribe to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating with a comment. Your subscription and ratings are essential to our success. You can do this on your favorite platform. And for more information, links to our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages, visit our website at itwasn'tmetruecrime.com.
We are so grateful to spend our time together and share our murderous stories. Thank you so much for your support. Please recommend It Wasn't Me to your true crime loving friends and family. Also, thank you to our Patreon supporters. You are the extra. You too can become one of our Patreon supporters by signing up at patreon.com/itwasn'tmepod. Thanks again, guys. And remember,
it wasn't me.